lot of chapters in Job, 42 chapters. So we're not going to get through all of those today. Maybe only about half of those. No, just kidding. Probably the first three chapters, maybe at most. But the book of Job is perhaps one of the earliest books of the Bible. You know, it's set in the period of the patriarchs. And it tells the story of a man who loses everything. He loses his wealth, his family, and his health. And he wrestles with the question then, why? Why did all of this happen? You know, and this book begins with a debate between God and Satan. And it moves through three cycles of debates then between Job and his friends. And it concludes with a dramatic divine diagnosis of Job's problem. In the end, Job acknowledges the sovereignty of God in his life and receives back more than he had before his trials. And that's taken from the introduction to Job in the Open Bible. And also, I'm going to be quoting some things or using some things from the church's Bible reading program. And for those of you that have gone through that, this was back in February, March, and April of 2005. So if you'd like to look at that, or if you already have that at home, some of the information we're going to go through today is from what's contained in the Bible reading program. And that will be your homework for the next Bible study, is to read through further chapters of Job. Because we're going to cover probably three chapters today. And then the next Bible study, we'll probably try to skip nearly to the end of Job. So we're not going to be able to go in detail on the middle part of Job, but we're going to start out here. The author of the book of Job is unknown. You know, some people credit Moses with writing this book, while others think that Job himself may have actually written it. And yet others seem to think that maybe Elihu wrote the book. You know, and some people tend to think that the story of Job was passed down orally and written down much later, many generations after it actually happened. You know, Job is considered by some historians and scholars to be one of the greatest epic works of literature. Some even think that because of its poetic structure, that the book of Job is fictional, you know, that it didn't happen. But you'll find in Ezekiel 14, you know, where Job is mentioned as a historical figure, along with Noah and Daniel. And also in James chapter 5 in the New Testament, the perseverance of Job is mentioned. And so we'll look at who was Job, when and where did he live? You know, the answers to these questions are not really known for sure. There's some speculation on it. But the other part of that is it's not really necessary that we understand exactly where he lived to appreciate and benefit from this story and the themes and the lessons that are contained in this book. You know, Job represents all believers in our struggle to cope with the hardships of life and maintain our trust and confidence in God, you know, come whatever may. You know, Job is in the time period of the patriarchs. You know, as we will see as we read this, we'll start reading here in verse 1, just getting into this. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, and who feared God and shunned evil. It says here that he was blameless and upright. You know, it doesn't say that Job was sinless. You know, blameless is the word used. And if you do a study on that or look that up in the concordance, the word used here can also be translated perfect. But again, it doesn't mean that he is without sin. What the word means in the context here is that Job is an individual that is upright. You know, he's without blemish. Or he's an individual that has integrity. And so Job wasn't without sin, but Job was a pretty good guy. He had integrity. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. Also his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yokes of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. Now his sons would go and feast in their houses, each on his appointed day, and would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. So it was, when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings, according to the number of them all. And for Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." And thus Job did this regularly. So what we see here again to give us an indication that this is happening during the time of the patriarchs is that Job offered sacrifices for his children. And after Israel became a nation, these sacrifices were then to be performed by the Levitical priest. So Job was offering sacrifices at this time for his family. He likely lived in the second millennium, from 2000 to 1000 B.C. And another indication is that Job's longevity of years and his position as a man whose wealth was measured in cattle. We see here listed that he had great possessions. He was a very wealthy and prominent man. And in verse 6, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came upon them." And what's taking place here is that this is most likely on the earth somewhere with the Lord, or God the Word, that would later become Jesus Christ, talking with the angels. And Satan comes upon them. "And the Lord said to Satan, 'Where do you come?' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' And then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?' And then Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Does he fear God for nothing? Is he doing that for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land.'" So he's asking here, does Job obey you and do what he's supposed to for no reason? Are you not blessing him, protecting him? "But if you now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And this word used here for curse, if you look that up, actually means to bless. The word is, I don't know if I've got the pronunciation right, but Barak or Barak. It's B-A-R-A-K. And it's Strong's number 1288. And normally, in a sense, it means to bless. But it can be used in this sense here, kind of in a euphemistic sense, such that it has a negative meaning. It might even be that the sense here is that Job would say goodbye to God, or Job would turn his back on God. It's what Satan is saying. Stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will turn his back on you, or he will turn away from you, or abandon God. "So the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person.' Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord." So something else we see in verse 12 here is that God has control over Satan. Now, he allows Satan to lay his hand on him, but he doesn't allow him to do any harm to Job himself, not at this point. And so God's sovereignty is illustrated here. You know, God has control and has power over Satan. And then as we go on down through the next several verses there, you know, Job loses his oxen and his donkeys. Job loses his sheep and his camels. And these reports are coming into Job. His servants are coming and telling him, you know, these things have been taken, they've been destroyed. And then, while he was still speaking, in verse 18, another came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young men, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." So Job has gotten these reports that he's lost his livestock, he's lost all of that. And then the last report is that his children and their families have been destroyed. They've been killed. "Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and he worshipped. And he said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away.'" And imagine that attitude. Here Job has lost, all of his wealth, his possessions and his livestock, and he's lost his children. And then this is the attitude that he has. I didn't have anything when I came into the world. I'm not going to have anything when I go out. God gives stuff to him and God takes it away. And then, "Blessed be the name of the Lord." And this word, blessed here again, is a form of the same word that Satan was using earlier when he was saying that if you take these things away from him, he will surely curse you. So it's kind of ironic there that Satan was so sure that take all this stuff away from Job, take all his possessions and his family, and he will turn his back on you or he will curse you. But Job did just the opposite of that. Job worshiped God and blessed the name of the Lord. And in all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. So Satan's attempt was foiled. Satan thought that Job would surely curse and turn his back on God, but that's not the case at all. "So again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came again. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.'" And then again, the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered Job? There's none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause." And so he says, here he is, he's blameless and upright, and I took all his possessions, and he suffered through all this, and still he holds fast to his integrity. And so what do you think about that, Satan? And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." And so the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life." So again, this control that God has over Satan. You can do some harm to his person, to his health, but you can't kill him. And then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his feet to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of ashes. And again, as Mr. Keller's mentioned in the sermon, sometimes we don't do too well with pain. I've been through a few painful injuries, but nothing like boils, nothing like Job did, and probably nothing like a lot of other people here have. So it's hard to really imagine how painful this would be to have these boils over your entire body. And so Job is really going through some stuff here. And in verse 9, his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." And it almost seems when you read this verse that Job's wife was maybe not a really nice person, or she was kind of a bad individual, or whatever the term is, saying, you know, look what you're going through. Why don't you just curse God and die? You know, but it may be that she's really not that bad, you know, as it seems when you read that. You know, she's been beside Job. She's lived with Job. She's seen Job's integrity. She knows how Job worships God, serves God, you know, and what a good man he is. You know, she knows that about Job. And now here she is watching her husband, the one that she loves, go through all this that he's going through. You know, she's gone through losing the possessions and the children with him, but now he's going through all these painful boils, and it might be that she feels a little bit helpless. You know, she can't reach out and soothe his pain. You know, she's watching him suffer tremendously. We might compare that to someone today in our society that's watching their mate go through a terminal illness. You know, or some other ordeal that is really, really painful, either physically to them or emotionally. You know, when they can't reach out and touch it. They can't reach out and help them. You know, you watch them suffer. You watch them waste away. You watch them go through this. You know, maybe what she was wanting here is just wanted some relief for her husband. Just wanted to see his suffering and his pain end. You know, it may be what she said or why she said what she did here. You know, it may not be that she was a bad person. It's just she couldn't bear to watch her husband suffer anymore and the pain that he was going through. You know, it's hard for her and it's hard for us also to understand suffering like that. You know, to understand why things like that happen. But Job in verse 10, he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. You know, shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" You know, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. You know, and Job realizes here that what he has, all the blessings that he had, the life, everything he has, you know, comes from God. God has allowed him to have the things that he had. You know, and I guess maybe he realized that there is some reason that I'm going through all this. I don't know what it is, but there is some reason that I'm suffering this way. We have to have faith and trust in God when something like that happens. And in verse 11, "Now when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment to come together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him." So these three friends came from their respective areas. You know, they agreed to come or planned to come and to be with Job and to offer him comfort. So likely what is happening is that there's a period of time, whether it's days or weeks, that Job is suffering here with these painful boils until his friends arrive there. In verse 12, "And when they raised their eyes from afar and did not recognize him, and they lifted their voices and wept, and each one tore his robe and sprinkled dust on his head toward heaven." So here they come and they see Job, but they don't recognize him. And he probably looked pretty bad. You know, if he had all of these boils and if he'd been scraping them, you know, he probably looked pretty rough. You know, he was in a real mess. And we've seen that with, you know, I've had family members that, you know, that have had terminal illnesses or, you know, cancer. And as they go through that, and as that takes its toll on them, you know, people lose a lot of weight. They waste away. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, but, you know, they do, their appearance changes a lot, you know, as whatever is afflicting them takes its toll on them. So here's Job, and his friends didn't recognize him. You know, when they wept, when they saw him, you know, at what a terrible, terrible trial and ordeal that he was going through. You know, so they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, you know, for they saw that his grief was very great. So his friends have come to him, you know, to comfort him and to try to help him with his trial and to help him through this. You know, when they spend 7 days and seven nights just sitting there with him, you know, when they could tell that he was really in pain, he was really upset, really going through quite a terrible ordeal. And in chapter 3, after this, Job opened his mouth and he cursed the day of his birth. And Job spoke and said, "May the day perish on which I was born and the night in which it was said, a male child is conceived." You know, in Job's suffering, as probably any of us also, the painful experiences that we go through sometimes might cause us to say things that we don't actually mean. You know, it might be causing Job to say things that he doesn't actually mean. You know, he's sort of starting to walk a fine line here on the verge of crossing over to where he's actually giving in to what Satan has said would happen. You know, if you do this to him, he's going to curse you. Just wait and see. So Satan might have been behind the scenes watching this unfold and say, "He's almost there. I've almost got him. You know, he's about to curse you. I'm about to win. You know, I told you this would happen." But, you know, as you see, Job didn't quite cross over the line. And he goes on through the chapter there, you know, about all the pain that he's going through. You know, would it not been better if I had just died when I was born? Then I wouldn't have to go through all of this. And then, verse 8, "May those curse it who curse the day, those who are ready to arouse Leviathan." You know, and this Leviathan was, you know, a monster of the deep. But it may also be that, you know, that it's used here as a reference or a figure of Satan. You know, being this monster that is that's causing a lot of this pain and suffering to Job. "May the stars of its morning be dark, may it look for light, but have none, and not see the dawning of the day. Because it did not shut up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hide sorrow from my eyes." You know, why did I not die at birth? You know, why did I not perish when I came from the womb? So Job is, like I said, sort of a fine line, almost crossing over to curse God. But he didn't quite go that far. As we read on down in verse 25, "For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me." And you might ask the question, you know, well, why did Job go through all this? Why did God allow all of this to happen to Job? You know, as we read, he was a blameless individual. You know, he's not without sin, but he was a pretty good fellow. You know, he feared God, he obeyed God, he had integrity. So you think somebody in that position, you know, would be spared from some of the stuff that Job went through. It might possibly be that here in this verse 25, you know, "For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me." You know, Job This may have been Job's fear. You know, Job was afraid of losing his family and his possessions. You know, he may not have been afraid of death himself, but this may have been his fear. You know, as Mr. Keller's mentioned earlier, I don't know that I'm really afraid of death myself, because as we know, we have something better waiting for us. But what concerns me most about that is the people that will be left behind. You know, will they be taken care of if something happened to me? You know, I would be better off probably. You know, I'm not really afraid of me dying, but I'm concerned for those that would be left behind. You know, when Job, maybe in his fear, you know, he was afraid of losing his family, afraid of losing his possessions. And so this may have been a way for God to help Job with this. You know, that this is his fear. So he has to go through and experience some of this so that he can grow. You know, through this experience, you know, Job might increase his faith. You know, not be afraid of the future and develop a deeper love for God. And in verse 26, I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, for trouble comes. That verse might be that Job realizes now that his three friends have come to comfort him, but he also may realize what's about to take place with all of their discussion and speeches with him. You know, that they're there to point out his sins to him and to tell him he's done all of these things wrong and that's why you're suffering. So it's almost like he realizes what's about to take place with his three friends, and that it's not going to be a very comfortable situation. You know, and he views this as trouble coming to him. So we might ask then, what would be the application for us today? You know, we're going to stop with these three chapters for today, but this application for you and I today, I mean, we can read through the story of Job, and it sounds like he went through some pretty bad things. But for us today, you know, how would we apply this? You know, there are many people going through trials, a lot of really bad trials. You know, people here in our church and in congregations around the world. You know, there are many, many trials that people are dealing with. You know, and with the economic downturn, you know, people have lost jobs, they've lost their income, or it's been cut drastically. A lot of people have lost investments, retirement funds. You know, with the stock market, they've lost a lot of their value. If you can imagine people that have worked all their lives and got all the savings and thought, I'm going to be set for retirement. And then all of this happens and they lose it. They lose half of it, lose a third, two thirds, whatever it is. You know, they lose this retirement or lose this investments. And sometimes even people lose their homes or lose property. And we also can lose family members. You know, physically we lose family members, you know, they either to accidents, diseases, or whatever. You know, people do die and we lose family members. But also, you know, we can lose them spiritually. You know, as we're all familiar with some changes in different groups that have gone on, you know, I've lost family members spiritually. Yeah, so Job went through some pretty bad things, but you know, you'll find if you look around, we're all today going through a lot of things very similar to what Job did. You know, some of it may not be quite as drastic, but some things may be just as bad. You know, when you're the one in the middle of the trial. So it seems, you know, as we ask, then why would God allow such a thing to happen to Job? You know, does it seem in this instance that, you know, God is cruel? Or did it seem like that God and Satan were playing a chess match and that Job was the unlucky recipient of what they were doing? You know, what did Job do wrong? Did he do something to cause that? But the answers to those, you know, it was not a contest between God and Satan at all. You know, the events that we saw there demonstrates God is in control of us, and God is in control of Satan. And God's sovereignty over Satan was demonstrated. You know, when Satan drops out of the picture here, you know, after he realizes that he's been defeated, Satan dropped out of the picture, but Job's suffering continued. You know, why was that? It might be that Job still needed to grow spiritually and come to really know God. And if you think about it, we're all in this same boat that Job was in. You know, we're all in continuing need of spiritual growth, you know, until that very moment that we're changed to a spirit being. You know, the purpose of Job's ordeal was not to show Satan that Job was steadfast and he would not curse God. You know, the ultimate purpose of Job's suffering, you know, is to perfect his character, making him an even better person than he was in preparation for a future in God's kingdom. You know, we have to have the attitude that Job did. You know, realize that what we have comes from God. You know, He allows us the things that we have. Sometimes they may get taken away. But if we can keep our eye on the big picture and realize that we don't understand today, we don't understand now why we have to suffer such things, and we don't know the reason behind it, but the important point is that God does. You know, God is in control, and He has control over our lives. And we have to trust in Him that He knows what's best and He's doing what's best for us. You know, we can always keep Romans 8:28 in mind. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called, because that would be you and I, that are called according to His purpose. You know, God has a plan for us. You know, and sometimes it may be uncomfortable for us, but we have to keep focused on the fact that, you know, God is in control and trust Him to do what's best for us. And we'll stop there today. And if you want homework for the next time, you can read the book of Job. And the next several, probably 30-something chapters, have to deal with Job's three friends and their speeches to him, trying to help him figure out why he's going through what he's going through, and then Job's conversation with them. So if we get to do another Bible study...